You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Are we billing this as kind of like as a memoriam type show?
We could. It's definitely got the potential because he did, you know, he was in a lot of iconic movies from, especially if we're going to go 80s this week or this episode. He was in stuff in the 80s that, and you know, he may not have been a lead role, but he played so many great roles in those. And it's not just sci-fi either. I mean, he was in, you know, Inc. as well. So.
All right. So did you guys want to, are we going to kind of use the same format as we did before with the icons then, where we list off all of our, all the movies he was in the 80s, and then we pick like our favorite like movies that he, you know, that we liked about him? Is that a way to do it, or did you want to change things up?
I don't know. I haven't been able to put a lot of time into thinking about a lot of, like, how we can do different things. I know you came up with some great ideas recently with the different types of things that we could do as far as little bits or whatever, short bits to add into the show. But I've been a little preoccupied.
I get it last week or so.
Between moving between three different houses over the last week, it's been a little nutty. Yeah. So we just got our power back yesterday. Actually, we were down for 5 days.
Oh my God.
It's been fun.
For lack of another concept, and just to get things rolling, I think we just treat it like we did the icons then.
That sounds good.
No sense in making up anything new at this point.
Yeah, we, looking at his 80s credits, I mean, he's got a lot of fun stuff in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't quite gotten that, though. Still in the 90s.
I've got my favorite line by him already, so.
Yeah, I'm so curious if it's going to be the same one as mine.
Probably.
But let's jump into it then.
Okay.
This is 80 Something Podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the thief? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Ghostbusters!
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I.
Joe! Be it to each other. And party on, dudes!
So this is Banzai Retro Club, and this is episode 5 of 80 something. And we're gonna take a little things, a little. I'm gonna say topic matter that I'm normally not one to cover, but more of a memorial. We had a great actor that recently passed away, Harry Dean Stanton, and. Yeah, he's a very iconic actor throughout all the decades. But since we're doing our 80s thing on this episode, we're going to keep it the topic matter somewhat into that decade. But being Bonsai Retro Club, we can obviously go, talk about 70s, 90s stuff if we need to or want to. So I'm Dave. Online, I've got a good friend, podcaster, Scott.
Hello.
And the wonderful, lovable Rose.
Hey, guys.
So, as I said, we're going to be talking Harry Dean Stanton. I don't even know why I keep doing that. That one I might leave in. Just because, people can just tell how unprofessional I am. So, what we've done, if you're a longtime listener of the trio of us, you know that we had this thing on 80s Reboot Overdrive that we call the Icon Series. And we're going to use kind of the same format to do this episode because we just want to get things kind of rolling. Mr. Stanton, in the 80s, let me scroll all the way down, he has a lot of credits. In 1980, he was in Death Watch. In the same year, he was in The Black Marble. Same year, he was in a TV movie called The Oldest Living Graduate. And then he also did Private Benjamin in 1980. 1981, he was in Escape from New York as Brain. And then 1981, One from the Heart. 1982, he had a episode of Laverne and Shirley under his belt. And then he was in Young Doctors in Love. 1983, another TV movie, I Want to Live. 1983, Christine. 1984, Paris. Oops, I'm sorry. 1984, Repo Man. Same year, Paris, Texas, and The Bear, and also Red Dawn. My God, this guy's so busy. 1985, we got Euphoria, One Magic Christmas, and Fool for Love. 1986, Pretty in Pink. 1987 TV series. Looks like he did one episode of Fairy Tale Theater as Rip Van Winkle. I can really see him as Rip Van Winkle. Mm-hmm. 87 again, Slam Dance. 1988 TV miniseries, The French as Seen By. 1988 Stars and Bars. 1988 again, Mr. North. And Last Temptation of Christ in 88. Let's see, and then 1989, he is going to wrap it up with Dream a Little Dream. He was in Twister and The Jim Henson Hour as Chancy Bello. A lot of credits. This guy is just extremely busy all the time. It looks like every year had at least two credits, if not four. So amazing, absolutely amazing. Before we started talking, or actually during the conversation, Scott had alluded that there was a phrase that he says Harry was prolific for him as a memory. So I'm really curious to get to that. So Scott, what do you got for us?
Oh, you want me to start with that already?
Yeah, because I want to find out if it's the same one that I've got.
Well, I would have to say my favorite, maybe my favorite character by him, is from Mr. Eckert from Red Dawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the line is, "Avenge me!" He's just, he's yelling it out, and it's so passionate and real. And he was just talking to his sons, Patrick Swayze and Charlie Sheen, and they were leaving, and he yelled out to them. And there's a speech that he gives right before they walk away from the fence. On two sides of the fence, he's in a concentration camp kind of thing, and the two boys, they had escaped with the other guys, the other kids from the high school, and he had this nice monologue that he went through, and how proud he was of his boys and stuff. And then as they're walking away, he just yells out, "Avenge me!" And they did that, and it's only two words, but it was very powerful, and I can see it exactly the way the expression on his face and stuff. And he was really, this is kind of an unexpected icon that, okay, I think everybody knows, you see his face, everybody knows he's been in a lot of stuff, and, you know, he's never really, there hasn't been too many where he's been the lead role character. He's typically a supporting actor, but he's been in so many things, and not just in the 80s. I mean, we can go back into the few in the 70s that I can recall, and then the further into the 90s too, but he really was an icon. And, you know, we usually talk about icons. We had talked about icons in the past from our previous shows. One, you know, actors or actresses or musicians that jump out at you as, you know, big names that jump out at you as icons. And this is somebody that I think kind of flies under the radar, even though he was so busy. I mean, you, like you were saying, Dave, he's busy in every year. He's got two, three, four, except for 1986, and that was Pretty in Pink. But that was, he just had one in 1986. But really, he's a great actor, and he's done so many great roles, especially in the 80s, with so many great. Well, you know, he kind of leaned towards the sci-fi a little bit, leaned towards the sci-fi type stuff. But anyway, yeah, that's my favorite role of his.
And that's the exact phrase I was thinking of.
Yeah.
You know, I had a feeling that's where you were going to go with it.
And it's a moment. It's a moment. You know, it really is.
It is a great 80s moment. But, like, thinking through that moment, and I'm thinking, if I'm that character, I don't know if that's my parting words to my boys. You know, I mean, sure, you're mad, and you can tell the kind of dad that they portrayed him as. I mean, he raised boys that could be self-reliant.
Yes.
And you could tell that was the kind of father, you know, that they were looking to portray there. And that made, you know, those characters in that situation probably successful. So for that character, yeah, Avenge Me probably is what a parting word would be. But knowing, you know, the difference in my father's skills versus his, that's not what I'm saying. I'm thinking I'm being a lot more softer. And I think that's just the... you know, the character that he plays, and that's why I got to give credit to that, is that I see, you know, he did that exactly as it had to be.
Yeah.
And you believed him after that speech you mentioned, you know, that he's, you know, sitting there telling the boys, don't cry, don't, you know, you cry right now, you get it done with, and then, you know, you move on. And you could see that guy going, avenge me. You know, like, of course he would. But a lot of his characters, I don't know if, you know, he's done comedies, but he's the straight man. You know, he's giving the lines straight. And, you know, they're comedic because they're given in that kind of delivery. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, one out of the list was Private Benjamin. And I don't know if you guys saw this one, but, you know, back in the early 80s, you know, he's a recruiter that recruited Private Benjamin, and just a very straight, you know, very, very straight-faced and believable. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, the Army's changed from what you may have gotten perceived. Yeah, we've got yachts and we've got country clubs. And she's like, oh, okay, I'll sign up for that. You know, and, you know... And you're like, you know, the whole time going, I would believe this guy. You know, if I was like, you know, sitting across the desk from him and he's a recruiter, I'd be like, you know, whether I know the truth or not, I'd be like, you know, I believe this guy because he looks honest and straight. But obviously just full of shit. So,
what they did.
They're not recruiters, they're salesmen.
But so Rose, what's your favorite memory in the 80s of Harry?
Damn it, I'm mad because I can't find the video, and I'm trying to think. There was a a music video. I want to say it was Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum that Harry Dean Stanton did. And he played like a gambler. And if I'm wrong, for God's sake, somebody tell me, because I remember watching this thinking that, geez, Procol Harum, that was like the 60s. But this was clearly in the 80s or 90s. I can't remember. And I'm looking on YouTube, and I'll be damned if they don't have it. So I'm going to have to move on. Harry Dean Stanton, to me, was like, he had so many memorable roles in his career. And he was from Kentucky, West Irvine, Kentucky. So he had a little bit of drawl about him. Every so often you can hear the accent, but sometimes you couldn't. He was in Christine. I'm not sure if we mentioned that one. Is that 1980 or is that a 79?
Yeah, 80, no, that, yeah. That
was 84, 85.
Okay.
83.
83.
Stephen King, yesterday, quoted, he said, he had the best lines in any movie. He says, and in my movie, in the movie that I did for my book, Christine, his line was, what am I going to do? I'm going to sell this shithole and move to a condo. And I thought, okay. That sounds about something like he would say. But he always had such really good lines. I had one of my favorite movies that he was in, Pretty in Pink, of course, but what can I say? I'm a slave to my own whatever. He made a really good dad, but he wasn't an atypical dad. He was like down and out dad. And mom had left when Andy was a kid. He never got over it. He had like all of these things that he did for his daughter out of just the sheer will to keep her happy. And there's sometimes he couldn't accomplish it, you know, and it was just like one of the few times that you saw a parent try to do the best for that they could for their kid. And, you know, it just wasn't working out. It was such an amazing, the argument they got into, you think because you go to a fancy school now, you can judge me and tell me what I'm all about, you know, well, thanks a lot, Andy, you know, I'm just like, whoa, you know, it was pretty harsh, but, you know, she kind of needed to hear that because, you know, she just figured ideologic, she's a kid, she sees it from not necessarily his perspective, but she sees it from an outsider's perspective, and like, sure, you need to just get over this and move on. Yeah, that's easy for you to say. Yeah. But the talk that he has with Ducky in the backyard, that's just priceless because truly he's patronizing the hell out of him. And poor Ducky's being serious. And here again, twist of turns. Here's Ducky being serious. And Jack is like, yeah, so have you mentioned any of this to her about that? You know, just like, he's looking at it from his point of view, whereas Ducky thinks, oh, all I got to do is tell her that I'm in love with her and we're going to get married. And, you know, Jack's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But you kind of see him trying to work it through, and he's being super patient with him. And, you know, he was really good for bringing things to light like that in his roles. And anytime you saw him in any movie where he could play something just a little off, not quite off, but, and then just kind of like he was like a medium kind of, like an even keel type of person, he could do that too. And I know he was 91 years old, but people like that, you don't ever want to see die because they're, and they won't, you know, because he's basically, he'll live on forever with the legacy that he left us, his movies. And he was a musician too, which was just so, you know, yeah, I could see that. Anytime you could go wherever he was and he could get him with a few people, a few musician friends that he'd play with, that he'd be in these little bars and clubs and things, and other people that were in the industry would know he was going to be there, or they were going to be there, and they would go and they would just hang out and listen to him. He's had a really amazing voice, and if you ever watched any of the videos on YouTube, it's just, you can just really, it would resonate with you because he had that low, deep baritone voice, and it just amazing, just a really, really cool human being.
So what instrument did he play? Or was he just guitar. A singer? Oh, guitar. Okay.
No, yeah, he played guitar and he sang. He might have played piano too at some time. But he was very multifaceted.
It appears so. You know, and this is weird because I was completely, like, had my wires crossed. Because the whole time we started talking about Pretty in Pink, I had somehow got my thought process and transplanted the dad for the pickup artist into Pretty in Pink. Mm. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, there's no pickup artist credit for Harry. And I'm like, why is that the case? And the whole time, like, we're talking and I'm thinking, I keep picturing the dialogue of Flash, which, you know, Dennis Hopper, you know, because I was like, why am I not seeing this? And the whole time you're talking, and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm thinking today. So that's what I'm basically saying. So I had Dennis Hopper and Harry Dean Stanton, like, crossed in the Molly Ringwald movies.
Yeah, but it's okay because they both played her dad, so it's understandable.
Yeah, you know, what I was going to comment was just on the different type of character being a father between Pretty in Pink and Red Dawn. You know, I mean, and he sold both of those roles so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the delivery of it, I think, is what, you know, he can get away with. And it's not like, you know, they're asking him to get, you know, that overly emotional. You know, just his straight delivery is all that's needed for those roles. But yet they, you know, they're not predominant, like Scott was saying, but they transcend because you remember him and those, you know, those characters, even though they're only in, you know, a few scenes.
Right. And it's just in any acting role, anything you've ever, you know, seen of any actor, the male lead or the female lead, whoever is starring in the movie, to me, I always felt like, okay, they've got the lead, so they're okay. I mean, they're going to give it all they've got, but sometimes you can tell that they're not. The ones that have the hardest roles are the supporting actors and actresses because they have to be just a little bit better, I think, and have their character shine so they'll be remembered later on. And I think it's, you know, for like producers and directors go, yeah, who was that guy that was along with Bruce Willis in that movie? And you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's that dude. Oh, yeah, we want him for this role. You know, because they already pretty much have figured out who the main character is going to be and who that is. But supporting actors, man, they've got it tough. And he always gave it 150%, which I know is numerically impossible, but you just always remembered him. Case in point. Okay. I was telling my husband last night, Harry Dean Stanton passed away, honey. Who? I'm like, seriously? Harry Dean Stanton. Repo Man, Pretty in Pink. I could go on. He goes, no. He says, the name doesn't sound familiar. So I showed him a picture, a recent picture. He's like, I don't know. I might have seen him in something. And I started naming off these. It happens. Okay, you have to remember he's Scottish. He doesn't always see the same movies.
That's right. That's true.
So I started. I'm like, you know, Red Dawn. No, I don't think so. And I started rambling, and I finally get to Aliens. And he goes, wait a minute. Let me see the picture. And I show him the picture. And if you've ever seen his picture, character picture for the movie Aliens, got the hat on, he's smoking a cigarette, the shirt's not tucked in, but it is kind of, he just looks like a big slouch. And I showed him that. And he goes, there he is. Yep. Oh, that's too bad. I'm like, seriously? I had to go back to 1979 for you to remember who he was. But it was fun. No, because it was just like, he was just letting me go through his whole list of movies. Nah, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. Oh, yep, there he is. But because the character stood out to him that much, he immediately remembered him. So, yeah. So that's kind of cool.
So it took you to 1979 movie to play some.
Yo, I'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
History. This day in October 8th, 1985, and it would have been, in 1985, it would have been John Lennon's 45th birthday. His wife, Yoko Ono, formally opened a 3.5-acre garden at the Strawberry Fields site in New York's Central Park. The area was planted with trees and shrubs and flowers gathered from across the world. And Yoko Ono made all this happen with a donation of $1 million. And I'm looking at that going, okay, that's a lot of money now. But in 1985, that is astronomical money. That's just, but you know what? She probably just said, yeah, do it. This is for John. You know, there was no monetary consideration, just whatever it took, you know, because he was taken from us way too soon. And, you know, I remember reading that and I'm thinking, wow, that's love right there. I mean, not only love for him, but love for what he stood for, what they stood for together, and to share that with his fans and the people in New York City. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen it. I mean, I was in New York in 1985 briefly, but I didn't get a chance to go see it. But I think if I would, it probably would have took me a while to come out of there, because I can imagine it's just probably like super amazing. And for, you know, for her to do that, that was just totally awesome, I think.
Yeah, as you were starting to talk, I was like going through my brain, because just earlier today, mm-hmm. there was like a Beatles song on the radio. And I was on my way to hockey taking my son. And God, I wish I could remember what song it was, but it was just that it was, I loved it. And it was like one of those things where I had to turn it up. And there's so many great Beatles songs that, you know, Mr. Lennon had such a great impact in, you know, part of, that are so iconic. And I can see why that was, you know, so memorable as a moment. You know, because you have to commemorate the lifetime achievement of what John gave us. You know, and, you know, even to this day, there's like things that, you know, as soon as you hear them, you know, they're like, I go to watch bands that do a lot of cover songs in the Chicagoland area, and they'll include things like Hey Jude, you know, Myself, I Love Yesterday, Strawberry Fields Forever, Eleanor Rigby, Revolution. Yeah. You know, I mean, all of these great songs. I mean, even tonight, I was playing, I play music during my son's hockey games. And one of the songs that I have queued up during the break and plays is Twist and Shout. You know, you know, and it's like, you know, thank you, John, you know, for doing that, you know, because I know that, you know, while he may not have written all of those songs, but he had a big part in them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think being able to have that much creativity and to share it with other people and it just keep flowing like that. I'm sure, you know, there were moments when, you know, he had dry spell or, you know, writer's block or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it just kept coming. It was just so prolific and so amazing. He was actually, when, you know, before he died, he actually was, he was back into the, in the charts after not being there for such a while. And, you know, the songs that he put out there, you know, Woman and trying to think of the other Jew Wheels. The, what is it?
Jew
Wheels. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. But he, that album, that solo album he came out with in the late 70s, early 80s, it was just like one hit after another. It was like he never even missed a beat, you know, and just being so awesome, you know. To me, the Beatles, there's a saying, and I don't know if maybe everybody's aware of it, I don't know, but it sounds like it's arrogance, but it really isn't. And if you sit back and really think about it, you'll go, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. The saying is, you will remember the day that you realized that the Beatles were the greatest band that ever lived. And I remember hearing that for the first time, and I went, ah, yeah, right. Okay. Whatever you say, dude. And then I was sitting in my room. This wasn't not too long ago, about 3 years ago. And a cat was sitting with me, and I was listening to compilation. I think it was the Love album that they put out. And I'm listening to that, and my cat, like, it's up in leaves. I'm like, dude, seriously? You don't like the Beatles? They're like the greatest band in the... Whoa. Okay.
That was the moment for you.
That was the moment. Trying to convince my cat that the Beatles were the greatest band that ever lived. And then it was just like, yeah, it totally made sense. It totally made sense. Because they were pop song moguls. They could write that shit in their sleep. And it never was crap. Never. There may have been like albums later on, you know, in their first inception, they were amazing. It was the combination of the four of them. You know? And it just, John Lennon, you know, brought so much to the table as a songwriter and a singer. Because you usually don't get both. Sometimes you get, you know, like a songwriter and he can't really sing, but he contributes more to the band as far as the music and the lyrics and everything. Or you get the singer that doesn't really write, so, you know, he takes that and what his bandmates offer him and run with that and make them hits. They all had it. All of them. Yes, even Ringo. He was a late bloomer, but he had it too, you know. But to be a part of something like that, just, it's mind-blowing. It truly is mind-blowing. And yeah, we want to argue the fact that Rolling Stones did the same thing. Rolling Stones were different. Sorry, they weren't the Beatles. They were, that's another podcast altogether. But yeah. So.
You remind me of a, like a quote from Pulp Fiction. And I actually just Googled it because I didn't want to get it wrong.
Okay.
But Mia Wallace, she's talking to Vince, and she says, my theory is that when it comes to important subjects, there are only two ways a person can answer. Mm-hmm. Which way they choose tells you who that person is. For instance, there are only two kinds of people in the world, Beatles people and Elvis people. Now, Beatles people can like Elvis, and the Elvis people can like Beatles, but nobody likes them both equally. Somewhere, you have to make a choice, and that choice tells you who you are. Wow. So then the question is, are you an Elvis person or a Beatles person?
Awesome. Is that a real question?
Well, you know, in the movie, you know, she was sizing up Vince, and Vince was obviously an Elvis person.
Right.
So the question is, are you a Beatles person or an Elvis person?
I think I'm a Beatles person.
I'm with you. I'm a Beatles person.
Yeah. And Elvis was the king. I get it. But I don't know. He didn't do it for me. He didn't really have the same impact as the Beatles.
So it's up to our listeners to help us define what does that make us as far as, like, people. You know, what is a Beatles person in relation to an Elvis person? But obviously, Rose and I, we're Team Beatles.
Team Beatles. Be interesting to find out what Scott is.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I would actually put him in Team Beatles camp.
You think so?
Yeah. What about you?
You know, honestly, I would think so too, because I've never really heard him make any declarations about Elvis.
It feels like, I'm going way off on a limb here, but I'm thinking that an Elvis person is kind of a soloist and kind of a hard charger. And okay. I don't see him that way. I see him kind of just a
more mellow.
Yeah, more mellow.
Yeah.
So maybe we need more Elvis people on our podcast.
We might want to consider that. Just to have the contrast. If you're an Elvis person out there, you need to comment when you do your review of our podcast on iTunes.
Yes, yes. Throw a go to BonsaiRetroClub.com and go to the contact page and let us know you're an Elvis person and you'd like to represent.
Yeah. And then tell us why you think you are and what kind of person does that make you.
That'd be very interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Now back to the show.
Right, the original Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is really, I might have to revisit that movie just because I'm looking at some of the screenshots from it. I'm like, wow, that was really an intense movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started a series that went on to, I mean, they're still releasing them, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may not be as good as the original, like the first one or the second, Alien and Aliens. They were both really good, but anyway, you know, there's another screenshot of Alien. Where the alien is reaching out his hand over his face. He's got the baseball cap on. He's just got this look of like, oh my gosh, what is this all about? And he's just, I really just thought he was he's a really good actor, and he brought a lot to the screen. And even though he did not play a lot of lead roles, mm-hmm. his roles were very important to a lot of those movies. And you're right about the supporting actor. That may be the most difficult. Like the first supporting role might be the most difficult role to play in a lot of these movies or TV shows, because you have to bring it up a notch just enough to not mm-hmm. not to overshadow the actual lead character.
Yeah.
But you have to play a big enough role in those movies to not be completely forgotten and put aside. So you have to find this nice little medium ground to where you truly are a supporting role, and you got to know that in your head. And he did a great job of doing that.
Yeah, so. He did.
And, yeah, as I was scrolling through the credits, and I'm like, okay, I know I've seen the movie, in some of these movies, and I'm finding myself looking them up, his character name, in those particular movies, just so I can reacquaint myself with what he was involved in the movie. And I'm like, Christine, it was Detective Rudolph Junkins. In my mind's eye, it's like, I see him in the movie, but I just don't see what he's doing. But then as soon as I see the screenshot, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the character.
Yeah.
So I can see why your husband had difficulty with that. Where you know that he was in these things. And what I was trying to do was, like Red Dawn, like we talked about, where you just remember those roles, remember those scenes without having to look it up. And I was scrolling through his credits to try to find when's the, what other movie would I not have to look up to instantly remember him from? And I actually had to go all the way back to the 60s.
Wow.
And that's Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
He was Tramp in Cool Hand Luke. So he's one of the other guys that was put in prison at the same time Luke was. And I think he always wore a hat, if I remember right.
He was a hat guy.
Yeah.
Like his hat.
But, I mean, he's, even in the 60s, still his credits are just phenomenal.
He's
been going strong since.
Goes back to the 50s.
Yeah, the 50s.
He started in the 50s.
Yeah.
So he's made a great career out of film, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done some really good ones, too. I mean, Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, he can go from Escape from New York to Laverne and Shirley. that's definitely range right there.
Yeah.
That is definitely range. I liked him in One Magic Christmas, too. That was such a mystical role for him. Well, that whole movie had, subtle magical overtones, but I think it was because of Christmas, but I really liked his role in that.
So did
anybody watch Fairy Tale Theater? Did you guys ever watch that?
No.
Maybe it's because I had kids.
Fairy Tale Theater?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah. They always had some pretty heavy hitters pulling off the fairy tale characters. It lasted quite a while.
So, let's see. What other 80s movies do we want to talk about?
So did you actually talk about your favorite one, or did you kind of piggyback off of the Red Dawn one?
I piggybacked off of that, and I went into Private Benjamin a bit.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Private Benjamin.
And I did like him as a detective in Christine. Now that I'm thinking that through. I'm just trying to think if there's something else, that really jumps out. And I was trying to remember what he did in Dream of Little Dream.
Yeah, I don't
know. I kind of remember that. I watched the movie enough, but I don't know. I don't think his role was very...
And that's another one of those that I've got to Google to get the image to see if it helps me.
Yeah, well, he also played Paul in The Last Temptation of Christ, which I could only watch. I could only watch that one time. It was just too radical, Even though I'm a Christian and I believe those things, but man, they took that one pretty far as far as brutality of showing the crucifixion of Christ and stuff. And so he played Paul, which is a very important role as an apostle. So
yeah,
I could only watch it once, so I can't even recall going back and think about how he portrayed that role. Paul.
I've never actually seen it.
Yeah, if you ever choose to, just be prepared. I mean, it's pretty. It can be pretty graphic at parts.
Yeah.
I wonder how many movies are out there like that that, you know, are powerful, but we don't have any need to revisit. Because, I mean, we alluded to that before with Lesson Zero.
Yeah, there's tons.
Well, Lesson Zero, I don't know. I know it's a... We've talked about how dark and you know, it's a real downer of a movie.
But I mean, I've seen it
several times. It's not...
Yeah, it's like if you're sitting, you know, at home on a Saturday night or whatever, and you're like, well, let's, you know, let's watch a movie. Does The Last Temptation of Christ or Lesson Zero or...
No.
You know, I don't know. Let's think of other great feel-good movies, you know.
Yeah.
That would, you know, that would hit the list. You know, Schindler's List. I mean, are we pulling that back out and saying, let's watch that again?
try one called Luna.
Luna? Oh, my God. Why does that sound familiar?
It was about heroin addiction. It was really harsh, man. But I remember it stands out in my mind. It's like, wow, I just can't even like stop watching this. It's so dark and deep, but I don't know if I could ever go back and revisit it, you know? It's pretty radical. But, yeah, I don't even remember what. I think that was in like 78 or something. Anyway, there's a lot of movies out there that you watch once go and just think, wow, that was really twisted and dark, and it would be too depressing to bust out on a Saturday night. You want to talk about a mood killer. You know? Saturday night, you got to bust out something like Sleepless in Seattle, or, you know, You've Got Mail, those kinds of romantic movies, you know.
Sure.
Something a little more happy.
Something that you know that's not going to end with, you know, Christ being crucified.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Or Pretty in Pink. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Yeah. You know, Pretty in Pink is one that you would bust out with no problem. You know.
Yeah. I could watch that one again.
Yeah.
Well, Repo Man.
Our love of the 80s. Repo Man was that was an interesting movie too. It was good stuff. Yeah. That's good stuff. Escape from New York.
Yeah.
And that's what I could watch over again.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this.
In fact, I've seen it probably a good 7 or 8 times.
I'm looking at this picture of Harry Dean, and I've gone through his IMDb and while you guys are talking, and there's just so many iconic scenes that he's been in different movies. And I can't even name the movie. It's Harry Dean Stanton in the picture, John Travolta, Sean Penn, and Bill Murray.
Give that to me again.
Harry Dean Stanton, John Travolta, Sean Penn, and Bill Murray.
Come on.
I am not making that up. Looking right at it.
Let's see. I'm looking at the pictures to see if I see that same one.
Yeah.
What era do you think that was? Had to be. Was it the 80s?
Oh gosh, no.
Later.
John Travolta looks kind of old. Yeah, maybe. Bill Murray looks kind of young, so maybe it was like 90s or something. I just, you know, there's a picture, there's like a tree behind them, a painting of a tree.
A painting of a tree.
Yeah, there's a gold frame. I'm trying to think.
Whoa, wait a minute. 60. Wait.
Image 60 of 110. Oh, wait, it's going to tell me what the movie is.
Image 60.
She's So Lovely, 1997.
Yeah,
wow.
Nothing on that one.
Maybe that's not Bill Murray. Maybe that's Nick Cassavetes. Robin Wright, Susan Taylor, Harry Dean Stanton. No. It must have been somebody else. He sure looks like Bill Murray, though.
He was in The Green Mile?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was the inmate that they would practice on.
I'm still not seeing the picture you're talking about. I'm on IMDb 49 to 96.
Oh, it was right underneath it.
Oh, man, The Green Mile, man. He was funny in that. Walking the mile, walking the mile.
Okay. Is that Charlie Sheen?
Oh, in the other picture where they're all sitting down? They're like outside?
That Owen Wilson?
Yeah, he's like hella old.
That's Owen Wilson? Wait. I see one with Owen Wilson. Or no, Luke Wilson. No, wait, I can never, wait. Owen. Owen Wilson. Is that Morgan Freeman?
I don't know. What picture are you on?
Well, I counted 49 to 60 on the IMDb page, but it doesn't tell me which picture. Oh, it's the one right before it. No, that's not Bill Murray.
Yeah, it kind of looked like him at first. But he was too young for 97.
That would be, Nick, like you said, Nick Cassavetes.
Cassavetes.
The picture right before that, where they're on a beach.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that is wild. Is that Morgan Freeman, Charlie Sheen, Harry Dean Stanton, Willie Nelson, Owen Wilson, and Gregory Sporlitter and Sarah Foster. Oh, The Big Bounce. I don't remember that movie. Anyway.
Yeah, me neither. What year is that from?
2004.
Oh. Gary Sinise, Owen Wilson, Sarah Foster, Charlie Sheen, Vinny Jones. Wow. What a cast.
Yeah, he's been in a few pretty heavy hitting casts, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He was best man at the wedding of Jack Nicholson and Sandra Knight.
Hmm. Interesting.
That does not surprise me.
After their divorce, Nicholson lived for a time with Stanton. So what does that look like? Does Nicholson go, I'll just sleep on the couch?
You won't even know I'm here.
Well, you're Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You couldn't say no to Jack. So,
Of course not. He's got a list of things he has for breakfast. Yeah, so like hard-boiled eggs with a half a piece of toast and a glass of orange juice. Has to be fresh squeezed. Then I take my vitamins and I go out for my morning sabbatical. This is all before 8 o'clock in the morning.
You mean he doesn't eat like a bowl of corn pops?
No. This is Jack Nicholson that we're talking about.
Fruit loops? Some Fruit Loops?
Oh, this is interesting. Harry had a relationship with Rebecca De Mornay from
81
to 83.
What?
Way to go,
Harry. Sure.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's pretty amazing.
Good for him.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah,
long, fruitful life. 91
he did.
Years old. Awesome.
I like the fact that he died of natural causes.
91.
Not the fact that he died, but, sometimes if he's like 91 and they're like, throat cancer or... And he smoked for like 75 years, so American Cancer Society, just take a note of that. Natural causes. Not that I'm advocating people smoking, but I'm just saying it doesn't always work out like that. So maybe that was the only thing keeping him together. Maybe he would have died sooner if he quit smoking.
You know, I've heard stories of that nature.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, that's about all I got on Harry Dean. I don't know about you guys.
I just like the fact that we were able to remember him, because he brought so many people joy and entertainment in all facets of his career. Just an all around amazing human being. To you, Harry Dean.
Yeah, we say goodbye to Jack from Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, we do.
All right, so that being the kind of the wrap up here, then just a reminder for all of our listeners: if you want to go back out and check to see what we're doing, we encourage you to check out BonsaiRetroClub.com, which has kind of all of our contact information and everything that you want to learn about us and keep in contact with us. You know, Twitter accounts and Tumblr and the crazy Instagram stuff I'm trying to do now. Yeah, so a lot of good stuff. We got blog stuff that's going out there where, you know, some of those entries were about movies that we saw back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So a lot of great things coming at you, and, you know, your gateway to that is that website. So BonsaiRetroClub.com. That's Z-A-I, not S-A-I. Rose, you got anything else you want to add here?
Do I? Are we on iTunes yet?
We are on iTunes now.
Hey, guess what, iTunes people? You get to give us your reviews. Yes, it's that time again for the wonderful people who listen to us as an entity, Bonsai Retro Club, get to come on iTunes and review us with your iPhones or iPads. And all of you fancy people out there who have the new iPhone 8 or you have it locked down for your pending purchase, you know what the first thing you're going to do is after you take that wrapper off and try not to drop it because it's all made of glass. but go on iTunes and look us up and say what wonderful, wonderful programming that we have for everyone here at Bonsai Retro. That's Bonsai Retro Club.
And also, we want people to subscribe. So go subscribe to the podcast at the same time that you're going to do that rating review. And, you know, if you're walking by, you see someone else with, you know, a smart device, iPhone, grab their phone and rate review us again. So we can treat this like voting in the great state of Illinois. Do it, you know, do it once, do it often.
But if it's an 8, don't drop it. It's made of glass.
Exactly. Scott, what else you got to add? Anything?
No, not really. Not this week, you know. I'm sorry if I was a little quiet this time around. I'm just a little distracted, that's all.
Scott's got a lot of things going on, and living in Florida, just not good times.
Yeah, we just, you know.
Been Irma, big hugs his way. Big
Irma,
giant
Irma kind of threw a wrench into a lot of things down here. And At least, you know, it ended up being a lot better than what was anticipated. I think we all dodged a bullet down here. So anyway, I'm just trying to get back in the groove of normalcy, really. that's the goal, is normalcy right now. So that's all. That's all I have to add.
Okay.
We're all good.
And, yeah, you're right. You know, things luckily weren't as bad as it looked, but, at the same time, had to be stressful to roll through. So, hats off to you.
Thank you.
So as I, try to come up with a catchphrase, all I've got right now is be excellent to each other. Want that to be your parting words because, you know, there's so many things going on between each other that everybody is not always kind and nice. Just watch the news and you see a lot of evidence of that. So my words of advice is just be excellent to each other. Treat everybody like you want to be treated and just be cool. Really? That's all I got to ask. So that's all I've got. Thank you everybody for listening and we will catch you next time. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!